Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, coming to you before Sunday's game at Staples Center against the San Antonio Spurs. Andy, in the wake, though, of Friday's horrible news for the Lakers, really horrible news for the entire basketball world.
I was going to say that even if you are a Celtics fan and you spent the last 17 years of your basketball love and life rooting hard against Kobe Bryant, if you appreciate basketball at all, this news bums you out.
Whether you love Kobe, whether you hate Kobe, if you like the sport of basketball, even in the slightest, you know, the news that Kobe Bryant tore his Achilles tendon on his left foot Friday night late in the game against Golden State, it's just awful news. And obviously that, I think, is what we'll be focusing on today. It was weird. Like, I was in the building that night, and it was surreal to be covering a locker room afterwards where the story was Kobe Bryant could be gone for 6 months or 9 months or a year or whatever that might be. It was bizarre.
Or career ending. People were actually talking about it given his age and the mileage and the severity of an Achilles, which, by the way, is no joke of an injury. And most players do not come back looking even close to the same. You have to think about it being potentially career-ending.
And that's something that, you know, I think everybody's going to be looking at and reading a lot about, you know, if they haven't already. The history is not kind for that. But it's just, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, how would the Kobe retirement issue and what could get him to play on and all these other things. And obviously the future of the Lakers is something we're going to get into a lot in this show. But I remember making the joke that, like, the only thing that you could do to get Kobe to keep playing, or, like, if you wanted to guarantee that he would keep playing, is amnesty, because it would just piss him off so much there's no way he wouldn't come back. It never occurred to me to even include injury, you know, in that category, because I don't think of Kobe as somebody who suffers catastrophic injury. It's almost impossible for him to do it.
Yeah, and, you know,
which is ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. Well, he's still a person.
He is a person, but most athletes don't suffer career-ending injuries.
But even just like a torn, like the idea of Kobe getting a torn ACL seems weird to me.
It does. I mean, he's been lucky in that sense that he's never dealt with a really severe injury before. He's played through a lot of injuries, and, you know, he's famous for it, and it's fitting that before walking under his own power off the court after tearing his Achilles, that he actually took two free throws. He was fouled on the sequence by Harrison Barnes when it happened. He took two free throws and sank them both. What it would take, seriously, in that moment, you know, physically the pain that you're going through, and mentally, because Kobe said he knew exactly what
was. He didn't describe it in detail, but Pau did. He asked Harrison Barnes if he kicked him, because that's the sensation. You feel like you get kicked in the back of the foot. And when Barnes said no, Kobe knew exactly what it was.
And so in Kobe's mind, you're thinking about, okay, my season's shot, maybe next season's shot, maybe my career, the rehab I'm going to have to go through. And this is a guy that already puts himself through a ringer to keep himself playing at that level. Physically and mentally, what he was going through in that moment, to have the wherewithal to stay on the court and actually make those two free throws. Dave McMenamin tweeted out, this was his flu game moment. 100% agree. Yeah, it was amazing.
And it's the mental aspect of it, too, that I think is even more impressive than the physical. Because, I mean, granted, that's got to hurt. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish the physical pain that he was in. But like you say, to have all of that, because there have been two moments where I think Kobe has been incredibly, where you really get a window into the humanity that goes into all this stuff. It was post game 7 against the Celtics when he was just exhausted and admitted that the moment in a lot of ways was bigger than him. I remember we talked about it. You saw him on the free throw line in game 7 of that game, having a horrible shooting night, trying to do anything he could do to get his team to win that. And the focus that it took him to make, again, go back to the free throw line, to make free throws, something he has done hundreds of thousands of times over the course of his life.
And very well. He's a very good free throw shooter.
But he had to summon everything inside of him to make free throws. And it was one of the most poignant moments that I've seen with Kobe, and then followed it up on the podium. And then this was the other one where you see him talk so openly about how sad it is because of all the work that it takes for him to get to this point and to be able to play like he does and the dedication that he shows to it. And to have all of that taken away two games before, granted, the rest of us don't believe it's going to, you know, any kind of playoff run would happen. But two games before the playoffs start,
before maybe meeting his goal, because right. He was putting himself through so much, throughout this whole season, but especially in April when he was averaging about 45 minutes a game, just because circumstances were dictating that this is what he needed to play,
or were they? A question we'll discuss in just a moment.
Right, that's true. We will debate that question, but it makes the injury feel both valiant and depressing at the same time, just because ultimately what he was doing was trying to will his team into the playoffs, and in the process, really, I mean, in a hyperbolic and athletic sense, killing himself basically for the privilege of getting slaughtered once they got into the postseason.
But you know, these stories, the injury itself shows the cruelty of sports. It shows the cruelty of, you know, the way that the athletes very rarely get to write their own ending in a way that they would want to. Ray Lewis got to do it, and you know, was fortunate. Michael Jordan could have, but then he screwed it up.
Jerome Bettis managed to do it the way he would want to.
There are individuals who have been lucky enough to have that happen, but circumstance almost always makes that impossible. And it isn't what fans would want to see, that Kobe could go out this year, maybe go out next year, and not win another title. But in a lot of ways, the effort that he's put in and the things that he's tried to do this year, not always perfectly, whatever, but nobody is, the things he's done this year to get to that point that you're talking about are sort of in a lot of ways as deeply meaningful, if not more, and more revealing about the guy than the drive to win 60 games, to go through the playoffs and all these other things, because not every superstar cares so much to even do what you're talking about. Most people would understand that reality and not feed into it. So,
and it's just, again, like we talked about at the top, if you appreciate Kobe Bryant's career, which we both do a lot, or if you're just fans of basketball, which we both are a lot, that the overwhelming majority of people listening to this podcast are in the same boat.
Like basketball, I am a little curious as to what you're doing listening, unless you just love us.
Or you happen to be our friend Todd Robert Anderson, who listens to our podcast regularly, does know nothing.
Yeah, but you mentioned the basketball gods, Andy, and it's a reminder of the sort of overarching cruelty of them. But in when you just look at the Lakers, I mean, my God, it's like the punishment just keeps coming. Mike D'Antoni's talked a lot about how the Lakers have messed with the basketball gods all year, messed with games and all these other things. And from a Lakers fan perspective, this might be the one thing that he was correct about. And that, I mean, this was not just like a little tweak, a little reminder. Oh, Powell, you know, strains a hamstring right before the playoffs and he can't play. Or Kobe, you know, tears his meniscus and he's going to miss three games or whatever it might be. This is a sledgehammer. This is, you know, this is like biblical. This is the story of Passover after like the first nine plagues apparently didn't get the Egyptians' attention. This is, you know, the whole thing with the firstborn, and you know, now Powell and Dwight are leading the Israelites into the desert. I mean,
I have to disagree with you because I don't think you're playing it up enough. This is the flood. This is absolutely
this is the
flood earth
and getting, the plagues.
This is the earth getting flooded. If you happen to own an ark, I'd maybe.
Which ironically, Kobe probably does.
What do you buy for the man who has everything? You know, plus he lives in Newport, right by the water.
I mean, you know, got a boat, got an ark.
Knows a lot of people. Sometimes even a yacht doesn't give you enough room. You need an ark.
But anyway, Kobe underwent in very Kobe fashion. It took him about 12 hours to get into the operating room. Dr. Neil Elatriche, the sort of go-to guy for this sort of thing. I don't think he's Spanish. I think he's Middle Eastern.
Oh, still should be Spanish for the Atriche. He's El Atriche.
But anyway, maybe he is. I believe he is Middle Eastern. But he goes and he has the surgery done 12 hours later. I mean, he's Instagramming photos of himself and all these other things going to do it. And it reminded me of a great joke. He goes in and there's an anesthesiologist. And what does the anesthesiologist say to Kobe Bryant right before he pumps in the drugs?
Mamba out.
Mamba out. That's right. But as a Kobe fan, you should be insulted that I even implied that there was an anesthesiologist there to begin with. give me a shot of whiskey and a stick to chew on, and let's sew this bad boy.
He's Dalton in Roadhouse. Right. Remember when
Pain Don't Hurt.
Well, Pain Don't Hurt, and he gets offered a local by Kelly Lynch, and he says, no, thank
you. My understanding, actually, Kobe woke up from the surgery, was pissed that he was given anesthesia, called Dr. El Atrache a pussy, told him to cut up and do the other one. And with no anesthesia.
Or I'm just
going, give me my shot
I'm
of
going
whiskey.
To a different doctor other than the Atrache.
You know what? I'm doing it myself.
You know what, though? It's funny. I mean, just because given the stakes and everything we've seen Kobe play through over the years, I half expected him to say, you know what? I don't have time for surgery. Tie it up. Just tie up my Achilles.
Surely there's some sort of knot.
Double knot it, because I don't want this to be an unrealistic
solution.
He
didn't go to a doctor. He went to some sort of naval officer to find out what's your strongest knot.
Who's your best sailor?
But yeah, I mean, Kobe surgery, hashtag Kobe surgery jokes.
But I mean, seriously, you expect that. Him just saying, we don't have time for surgery.
He is, though. He's already doing the things that you would, because there was some suspicion as to whether or not, are you going to be, briefly, I don't know why people would think this, but briefly the idea that, would he want to do the rehab to come back from this? Can he do the rehab and all that? And by the time he spoke to the media Friday night, he was already like, this is what I'm going to do.
And by the way,
and inventing the, he already had the voices of the media in his mind saying he couldn't. We haven't even had time to write anything down yet, but he's already talking about it. And this morning, Sunday morning, Instagrammed out a photo that his agent Rob Pelinka sent to him of a headline on a USA Today story, or excuse me, LA Times story, questioning his future. So the motivation is already there. He's already in full Kobe mode in terms of his rehab.
Yeah, but as much as I want to see Kobe beat the odds on this, and as much as I'm rooting for him to make the return, to basically make the impossible happen or seemingly impossible and play at that level, I got to tell you, man, the odds feel very stacked against him. I mean, I admit I'm not a medical doctor. I know very little
about
this. You admit
you're not a medical doctor. That is a thank you, Andy. That's bold.
But, we talked about
it's hard to make confessions like that.
No, I mean,
really, coming clean this afternoon. It is a Sunday.
Look, we've seen Kobe let down his guard. I'm going to let down mine as well. I'm not a doctor, Brian.
Okay.
But, we
changed the last third of this podcast. I had some questions for you.
I had this thing
growing on my shoulder. I was wondering if you could take a look.
It's your basket, like a basket case. That movie is really, really good. we talked about in the beginning of the show, the history of guys coming back from this injury is not kind. And, most guys do not look like themselves. In recent years, we've seen, locally, Chauncey Billups really struggle to return to form.
It's not so much it took Chauncey, I believe, 10 months to get back on the floor.
But he hasn't.
He hasn't really done much. And
he's constantly injured again.
Right. And it's the other stuff. He was struggled with injury before, but he just hasn't been able to stay on the floor.
Elton Brand went from very healthy, very, very effective player to popping his Achilles and never being even close
and
to the same.
There's an interesting article in the LA Times on Sunday. You should look it up, where Dr. El Atrache talks to the Times. El Atrache.
The Atrache?
he talks to, it's all one word.
I know, but I like this better.
He talks to the Times about it, and he makes that point that it's half the problem is, while the Achilles is healing, there's an impact on the rest of the body. And, it's easier, your muscles atrophy and all these other things happen. And, it's not just the one injury. It's a chain of things that go on. But that said, if there's something that we know about Kobe, it's that, and I love this, is I thought the most interesting thing that he said Friday night. What is he going to do? He's going to go look at the history of guys who have come back well, the guys who haven't, see what they did, see what worked, see what didn't, and try to improve on it. Like, he's already, in our conversation we had with Tim Grover, he said Kobe is very intellectually minded. He's very curious. He wants to see how the process works. And that was the first response that his mind had. So if there is someone who can do this, and can take care of his body in the right way and will give himself every advantage to be able to come back, it's Kobe.
But I'm just concerned.
Death stare his Achilles tendon into working the way he wants it to work.
First of all, it's very physically different.
He's probably already trying.
It's physically difficult just to get your leg at the right angle. I mean, if you really want to stare hard, how much, right, I would at your suspect own Achilles.
At least 2 or 3 hours a day of his rehab will be death staring the Achilles.
You know, I looked up the most famous example of a guy coming back from a torn Achilles and playing well is Dominique Wilkins.
Tom Brady had surgery like this, and he's done well in basketball. He also moves like a statue.
And nobody ever hits him when he's on the field. He has an amazing offensive line. I don't even know if he needed to have the surgery to keep playing quarterback. But Dominique Wilkins is the most famous example. And this happened to him when he was 32 years old. Did all the rehab, came back. He had 2 more All-Star seasons and played till he was 39. But I looked up some of the numbers, and while I know Laker fans and basketball fans would know that the two of them were in different stages of their careers, I'm not sure you really realize just how different until you look at the numbers. Like I said, Wilkins was 32, and a young 32. He had just turned 32. Kobe's going to be 35 in August. Wilkins was in his 9th season. Kobe just finished his 17th. Wilkins had logged at that point 25,596 minutes of regular season run. Kobe is at 45,390, which doesn't count the postseason. Playoffs
or the Olympics or anything like that.
Wilkins had played 48 playoff games by 92. Kobe's 2009 and 2010 title runs alone almost equaled that. And I realize we've advanced 21 years in medicine and science. But that is a lot of wear and tear to overcome. It just is.
And the uncertainty that creates is something that we're going to turn to here in a second, because it's a vital issue for the Lakers going forward. But the other immediate impact that I think is beyond Kobe is what this does for Mike D'Antoni. Because I am telling you, if there is a tunnel, if there's a back door, whatever means that they needed to get him out of that building, he didn't just waltz out the front door of the Staples Center Friday night into the dark of Los Angeles.
Walked out with the fans.
Just a hobnob with the people, because the people were very, very, very mad.
Sources far from the situation say that D'Antoni is actually going to Skype in his performance
this evening. The people were ticked.
Yes.
And because...
Mike D'Antoni is not on Twitter. This is the wrong time for him to open an account.
From the fans' perspective, from many fans, not all fans, but many fans.
Many fans.
Who already don't like the guy.
Based on what we saw on our feed at Cam Brothers, many fans.
And granted, it was in the heat of the moment, but most people, I think, are going to stay in this place. Mike D'Antoni was given this incredible gift of Kobe Bryant and managed to do something that nobody else had done before him. He broke it. He broke Kobe Bryant.
Mike Brown tried very hard leading up to this.
I remember
3-hour practices and playing Kobe. A lot of minutes. Mike Brown tried but he couldn't do it.
All Mike D'Antoni had to do was say, I'm going to play Kobe for 48 minutes for 6 games in a row and see what happens. But I remember when we were little and you helped me put together like a Star Wars Millennium Falcon set or a Hoth. I think it was a Hoth set. And I broke something like 2 minutes later and you like punched me in the face or something.
Pissed me off, man. I spent a long time putting that damn thing together.
I wasn't Kobe Bryant. So I can imagine the anger that the rest of the community might feel. Now, I don't think it's fair because, there's no... I don't think you can draw a direct line between the minutes he was playing. Every doctor that's talked about it, Tim Grover talked about it, all these things, you can't draw a direct line between the minutes and the injury. You could say they were going to burn him out. He was, something could have gone wrong and obviously did. But it's not Mike D'Antoni's doing that snapped Kobe's Achilles.
No, it's funny because Mike D'Antoni, and we've talked about this before, I think his biggest weakness as a coach I think has actually been this, inclination towards short rotations, playing guys big minutes and flirting with, if not actually burning them out. So this injury feels very symbolic of Mike D'Antoni's career. But like you said, as far as direct blame goes, I think that's actually irresponsible. Inaccurate.
It is inaccurate, but it also, too, it absolves Kobe from any sort of understanding of what he is. And, you know, I know people say he's the coach he's supposed to be. Kobe Bryant used to check himself back into games when Phil Jackson was the coach. I mean, in the NBA, when you're dealing with superstars like that, they have a certain degree of autonomy to do what they want. And the context was such that, you know, here dealing with it, we talked about this. It's like Argo. This is the best bad idea that we have. The Lakers were dealing with a bunch of really bad options. And this was, in their minds, the best.
Right. With D'Antoni, if the Lakers had ever put themselves in a position of having leads during some of these games, you know, the last six or seven or so where they didn't have Steve Nash, every single game was essentially a must win. And Kobe was playing, you know, somewhere between 42 and 48 minutes a night. If the Lakers had ever built up, you know, 7-8 point leads to start a quarter,
right,
then I would have said, you know what, D'Antoni needs to get him 3 or 4 minutes. You have to bite that bullet. And probably I think Kobe would have actually sat to begin with. But all of these games, they were either
tired. He sat down in the Memphis game and he said he was tired.
Right, but I'm just saying, I think he would have willingly volunteered and said, you know what, sit me for the first 3 or 4 minutes. All of these games, they started out either down or tight, you know, tied, whatever. They couldn't afford to sit him. There's no better options.
What made it worse?
Especially with Steve Nash out.
Sure. What made it worse, though, Friday, was the fact that he had already been hurt a couple times earlier in the game. It looked like an RG3 kind of thing, where you could just see it coming, like, get him off the floor, throw the damn towel, you know, all that stuff. And then he snaps his Achilles. But again,
plus who's going to sit Kobe Bryant in the last 3 minutes of a game? I mean, you're not going to do that.
Right. No, but there are people who think, well, if they had done it more before this, you can still criticize D'Antoni for the strategy. You can criticize him for mistakes that were made earlier in the season that put them in the position where they had to
Absolutely.
Win every game.
That is
there
a
are a lot of
criticism
for Mike D'Antoni. But
D'Antoni has not been perfect.
He shouldn't take blame for this, but he's going to, and public opinion in this city about the coach and about this team matters. And when you're coaching in the shadow of Phil Jackson, you're doing all these other things, and you are perceived as the guy who broke Kobe, this honestly could be the undoing of Mike D'Antoni in LA. I really could. I don't think it's overstating it to say Mike D'Antoni's future in LA could be irreparably damaged by this.
I mean, the Lakers might actually have to fire him. I mean, they may have to just for
appearances. I don't think they will right away, but if they get off to a slow start next year, Kobe's rehab goes wrong, or there's setbacks, or he won't be back until January.
D'Antoni may want to leave at that point. You know, I mean, and by the way, you brought up Phil just before we go, and because we got a lot of this on Twitter too, and I've even seen columnists write about it before, the idea that, you know, Phil Jackson would have never put Kobe through these type of minutes. You know, he never did anything like that before. First of all, I looked up the minutes that Kobe played the last 4 years that he was under Phil, either where they went to the finals or they were defending a title. And he averaged like 37 minutes a game with a team that was much less injured, much better, and always a top seed.
Sure.
So are you telling me that
I don't think people could think the overwork issue with Kobe was a season-long thing. It was a 3-week thing.
No, But my point is,
point A to point B thing.
Are you telling me that given that that's how Phil played Kobe under certainly relatively, you know, comparatively much better circumstances? If Phil's team had dealt with all the injuries that this team has right now, and they were just scrapping to get an 8 seed,
I don't think Phil would have sat him down.
Exactly, right. That's my point. Phil would have done it exactly
need to come out and all that.
It's revisionist bullshit, is what it is.
But the last,
neither one of us, by the way, is saying D'Antoni. Want to fire D'Antoni,
fine.
I'm sure they have their reasons. Neither one of us is going to chain ourselves to building an El Segundo
The minutes in the last, the D'Antoni's willingness to let Kobe play did not cause his Achilles to snap. Last big issue before we go. We spent a lot of time, I think it was like 3 or 4 shows ago, talking about the incredible benefit that the Lakers were going to get by Kobe Bryant making an announcement about his future, whether he was going to play in 2014-15 or retire after next season, and how good of a deal that was for the Lakers because they could plan it one way or another. They had the ability to figure out how they were going to construct the roster going forward. Presumably, all of that is gone. Kobe's not going to make an announcement about his retirement this summer. I'd be floored. they don't know exactly.
The only way that happens is if, like, a month into this rehab, he realizes this just ain't going
to
happen.
Or, like, happen. You know, you get to October and he just, like, something medically happens where it just goes wrong. You're right, like you say. But they don't know exactly when he's going to come back. Mitch Kupchak said Saturday that, you know, the 6 to 9 month minimum timeline would put it at the beginning of the season. And that is a quote, and I'm quoting, a reasonable goal. But again, it's 6 to 9 months minimum. Maybe he's close to ready at the beginning of the year, but, you know, it could be December, it could be January, it could be a little later than that, before, certainly before he's able to play. And I know you have your doubts, but assuming he's able to get to a point where he looks kind of like Kobe Bryant, if it takes till January or February, I have trouble seeing him saying, all right, I'm going to make, you know, this is my life, I'm going to play for 8 weeks as myself and then ride off into the sunset. So even if you think he's going to retire, not retire, all the clarity that they had goes out the window with this injury. And they have massive decisions to make. And if Kobe decides to play longer, it has a huge impact on their, how much are they going to pay him? There's a salary cap hold for him for 2014-15 that could impact how they sign free agents. All of these things are now up in question. They had some clarity. It's gone now. And it's bad.
Again, the basketball gods. Something happened like in the last year that pissed these guys off because they are angry at the Lakers at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
Like Jim Buss didn't go to shul. I don't know what this is about, but something pissed them off badly.
I can't let – we have to at least mention this. Magic Johnson apparently said that if he – because briefly, let's look at these last two games and the playoffs. And by the time you hear this, the San Antonio game will probably have been played. Magic Johnson apparently said – and I didn't hear him say it, but I saw it enough on Twitter and Bill Simmons – that on NBA Countdown or Shoot Around or whatever it is, that if Dwight Howard can't lead the Lakers to victories in these last two games, he wouldn't re-sign him. Andy, reaction –
I respect the hell out of Magic as a player, as somebody who's, you know, overcome, you know, an HIV sentence, as somebody whose business sense has really transformed Los Angeles. I mean, he really was very forward thinking in terms of the communities that could be vibrant for business and, you know, paid attention to pockets of Los Angeles that have been completely ignored. The guy is a visionary. Actually, looks to me like he could be a very good part of Dodger ownership.
Sure.
Twitter and a microphone, whether it be for NBA Countdown or, let's be honest, a talk show.
They've been
bad for Magic.
Yeah.
They bring out the worst in him because he loves big, bold, sweeping, attention-grabbing statements. You really wouldn't re-sign Dwight?
Let's say Dwight goes for like 38-14-6. Like
should have led
block,
better.
And the Lakers lose and they should've don't get in the better. Playoffs. I mean, it's just, I mean, everybody should just be happy that Magic Johnson is not the general
manager.
Again,
we both respect the hell out of the guy, but that is
apparently
a silly, terrible
general manager. All right, Andy, anything else?
No, I mean, really, ever since this happened Friday, it has stayed with me. It's been on my mind, and it's bummed me out. I'm bummed out
for people.
For Kobe. I'm bummed out for fans. I'm bummed out for myself as a Laker fan.
Just
sucks.
And for people who say, you know, the media hates Kobe and all this, I mean, everybody was upset. I mean, everybody, you know, media, the obviously team personnel, the Golden State Warriors locker room. I was in there for a couple. I mean, guys want to know what's going on. Everybody
you saw on
was
Twitter
upset.
Or in different stories, the outpouring of support and sadness for Kobe from his peers across the league. It really speaks to just the respect that he carries.
Yeah. If you really want a good perspective on how a good way to think about this, whether you like Kobe or don't, take a look. We posted it out there, sent it out there. We'll do it again. But Kevin Arnovitz, True Hoop, has a great piece about it. It's worth reading. Obviously, lots more to talk about with the Lakers this week in the playoffs.
Welcome Andrew Godlock, by the way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, apparently coming back. We'll talk about that, either the end of the season or the playoffs coming forward. I don't think this Kobe question is going away anytime soon, and so plenty to cover going
forward. If it does, he's really amazing.
Follow us at Cam Brothers on Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Check us out on TuneIn.com. That is all. Thanks so much for listening.